The self-driving car has been one of the most vaunted technological breakthroughs of recent years, but early promises that these autonomous vehicles would soon be on the roads have proven premature. Alex Davies follows the twists and turns of this story from its origins to today. He does so in his new book, Driven, The Race to Create the Autonomous Car. And we welcome Alex Davies to the roundtable this morning. Alex, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Alex is senior editor at Business Insider, where he oversees the transportation coverage. Let us talk about the idea of wanting to write the book, because this is a fascinating story of when you started to think of this as, okay, this is book worthy, this subject.
Yeah. So I've been covering transportation as a journalist for the last 8 years or so. And I spent a lot of that time at Wired Magazine, where we're always looking at the future of cars. And obviously, there's no more futuristic thing happening in the autonomous car space, in the car space, than the autonomous self-driving car. So I spent a lot of time covering kind of this rising industry, especially around this time period from 2014, 15, 16, when the hype was getting really big, when all these tech giants were loading billions and billions of dollars into this space and saying, this technology is going to be ready in just a handful of years. Like, we've got teenagers and they'll never need to get driver's licenses. And that got me thinking, you know, I studied history in college. I always like to take a little bit of a historical angle to things. And so I just started asking people kind of like, how'd you get into this space? Like, what is it that, like, what's happening now that's making this technology suddenly tractable in a way that it hasn't been for the century or so that people have had cars and have really wanted those cars to drive themselves almost from the beginning. And every person I talked to almost gave me the same answer, that they got into this industry in these events called the DARPA challenges, which started in 2004. And DARPA is an arm of the Pentagon that's kind of a skunkworks project place. These are the guys who are charged with coming up with the crazy inventions that no one else would think possible, just to make sure that the U.S. military is never surprised. So DARPA helped create the internet. They helped create stealth bombers and GPS. And in the early 2000s, they wanted self-driving military vehicles. So they thought, this is a great way to get soldiers out of harm's way. So they put on these races where they said, anyone in the country, build a robot, bring it to the Mojave Desert, and we'll race them across the desert, and whoever wins gets $1 million. And they did three of these races, and there were these incredible catalyzing events for the industry. They brought together all of these young people, from people who just liked tinkering in their garages, and roboticists at big universities like Stanford and MIT and Carnegie Mellon, and then people who are just kind of part-time amateur inventors. And what happened was, you got this group of people who came together and really proved that this technology was possible over the course of these three races. And then when Google founder Larry Page decided in around 2009, you know, I would like Google to make a self-driving car, these are the people he hired. He hired like the dozen best people from the DARPA challenges. And then they secretly worked on this technology for several years and came out a few years later, and all of a sudden created this car. And then Uber caught on to the idea, and Ford and General Motors caught on to the idea. And now we're at this point where every tech company worth its salt in the world has got its hands in some aspect of autonomous technology. And every automaker knows that this is going to be some element of the future. And the point where I realized this was a book was, I wanted to connect that history of the DARPA challenges with what's happening today by tracking just a handful of those people who are the ones at the center of it and really made that happen.
So this may come off as a psychological question, which is, what is it, say, and what is it about us that makes us want / makes big tech companies think we want a car that can drive itself?
There are a couple of big advantages that the people working on this technology talk up. The most obvious one is safety. Right. The number you'll hear again and again when you talk to people working on this tech is that 94% or something of car crashes are caused by humans, which makes sense. You know, humans, when they're actually paying attention to driving, are very good drivers, but we're not that good at paying attention. You know, we're not that good at being really conscientious. We get angry, we drink, we get tired, we get distracted. And so you get something like 35, 40,000 Americans dying in car crashes every year. And the argument goes that if you can make a car that is as good as a human driver or better, that you can start taking away that human error. So there's a big safety advantage. But I think people also talk up like just the economic advantage of all of a sudden, like, people are probably willing to pay more for a car that can drive itself, even if it's a car that drives itself only part of the time. I think Tesla with its autopilot and General Motors with its Super Cruise programs, these cars that can drive themselves on the highway to a certain extent, really prove out the economic case for that. It's also just, I think, kind of like this emblem of the future, like this idea that, you know, you've got a car and you don't even have to do the driving. Like, that's really nice. All of a sudden, you don't have to stress out. You don't have to worry about getting in a fender bender because you look at your phone. You can sit in your car. And isn't it more relaxing, like, to be in a car that you don't have to drive? Like, this is why rich people have chauffeurs.
Right. So then comes a lot of bad press as to the safety, and which, as you mentioned, is one of the big selling points. So has that completely rectified itself?
You know, it's hard to know where exactly the safety of this technology stands right now. And one of the big problems with this industry is that all of these companies are very tight-lipped about how their technology actually works and exactly how safe it is. We don't even have good metrics for understanding exactly how safe it is. And regulators, I think, have really fallen behind the ball, especially over the last couple of years. They've been really hands-off and said to the industry, you know, we're going to trust you. Just figure out how to make it safe and then, you know, give us some kind of proof. And I think that really backfired in 2018 when an Uber self-driving car in Arizona killed a woman. There was a woman crossing the street outside of a crosswalk at night, and the car didn't see her. Or the car didn't see her in a way that it knew this is a pedestrian and it knew it needed to stop. And what we found out in the aftermath of that crash was that Uber's program in particular was riddled with safety holes. Like, it wasn't a well-designed thing. They only had one person inside the car as it was testing, whereas the industry standard was having two in there. The woman who was in charge of stopping the car in case it didn't do what it was supposed to, who's now facing homicide charges, actually, or manslaughter charges. You know, police said that when the car crashed, she was looking at her phone. She was watching The Voice on NBC. And I think what happened after that is that, at the very least, what we could say is that I think all of these companies working on this technology have been much more conscientious about how they do that kind of testing. They've tried to scale back on-road testing and doing more stuff in computer simulations. Every one of these cars has two people in it. There are better safety programs now. So while it's hard to say whether or not the cars themselves, once they're loosed into the marketplace, will be completely safe, I think it's fair to say that the companies have gotten better and more conscientious about how they're developing their technology.
You talk a lot about this in the book, but the when is a huge question, right? Of when these will be commercially available. And the estimates seem to me to be all over the board.
They're all over the board because I think the question you have to ask isn't actually when is this tech ready, but where is this tech ready and how can it be used? Because if you go to the Phoenix suburbs today, you'll see Waymo's cars. So Waymo is the company that came out of Google's self-driving car project. You'll see Waymo cars driving themselves around, and in a lot of cases, without any driver in them, and they're people who have access to the Waymo app, which works just like Uber or Lyft. They call up a car, an autonomous car shows up to their door, and it takes them where they want to go within a prescribed area where Waymo engineers say, we know the cars can perform safely here, and also we're keeping a remote eye on them from like our customer service center. But if you were saying, you know, I live in Kansas and I want a car in my driveway that can take me anywhere I want to go, anytime I want to go there, and I own it, that's probably several decades away. And so the trick to understanding how this technology rolls out, I think, is comparing it not so much to the car itself, which, you know, and at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century was created, right? The internal combustion engine was created, and then all of these car companies popped up and started pumping out cars like crazy. I think the rollout here looks a lot more like the internet, where it was an idea that was put together, and then at the beginning of the internet, it wasn't useful for all that many things, and it wasn't useful to all that many people. It was military, it was academics. And then over the decades, it got more and more robust. It took on more capability, and it reached out to more people. And now it's the basic underpinning of like modern society. And I think you're going to see a similar trajectory with this kind of self-driving tech.
You asked the question about the companies being ready and the geography, but are we ready? Are we as consumers ready?
Yes and no. I think that at the very least for programs like what Waymo is doing in Arizona and what the General Motors-owned startup Cruise is doing in San Francisco, which is they want to create Uber without any drivers. I think that maybe not everyone will be ready, but there'll certainly be enough people happy to hop into one of these cars that they'll be able to make a business out of it. The actual economics of the business, I think, are tricky just because, like, taxi services are a hard thing to make a lot of money off of. But I think there are going to be enough people who are excited to get into these cars that they'll want them. I think the one place where we've shown we're not really ready or that we're not well suited to this technology is when you talk about these sort of semi-autonomous systems where the car takes over the steering and the throttle on the highway, but the human still needs to pay attention. The human needs to be a supervisor, right? You need to keep your eyes on the road because there are certain things the car can't handle. Humans are terrible at this. All of the evidence in the world says we are not good at paying attention when the car is driving itself. And that has led to multiple fatal crashes in Tesla cars. It's been a real problem that engineers at other automakers have tried to figure out. So I think, in a sense, we're more ready for the completely autonomous car than we are for the partially autonomous car where we still have a role in the driving.
Alex Davies is our guest this morning. The name of his new book is Driven, The Race to Create the Autonomous Car. So in this race to create the car, it seems as though there will always be, at least the way the designers are looking at this and those who are creating these cars are looking at it, is that they seem to be dreaming of a more immediate time where the autonomous car will have to get along with the non-autonomous car via a world that is only autonomous cars. Versus, rather.
Yeah. And I think that's just the reality of it. And that's what makes this problem so hard. Like, if they were starting from scratch, if there was nothing on the roads, no pedestrians, no cyclists, no human-driven cars, this would be the easiest problem to solve. It's easy, right? All these robots are super rational, and so they all talk to one another, look for one another. None of them break the rules. Actually, operating within a human-dominated world is incredibly difficult. And that's the problem with robotics in general, is that humans are, we're capricious, we don't follow the rules. And it's funny, one of the things that surprised me in this research was around 2007, in one of those DARPA challenges, these robots competing for the first time had to deal with a four-way stop, an intersection. And you'd think, like, oh, that's the simplest thing in the world for a human. This is still a tricky problem for robots to handle because, you know, the rules say, oh, well, whoever arrives first goes first. But what happens if you arrive at the exact same time? Right. If you're a human, it's easy. Maybe you nudge ahead or you wave the other person and they go. And we're good at communicating with that. We're very flexible in that way. Robots are very good at a lot of things, but flexibility is not one of them. And so figuring out all the things humans naturally do, like if snow is covering the lane lines, you kind of figure out where you want to be, right? You know, I want to be a safe distance from this other person. Or, you know, maybe this truck's cutting is really big in its lane, so I'm going to edge over a little bit and give this other person a little more space. That comes very naturally to humans. That's deeply ingrained in how we move. Robots are terrible at this. And that's what makes the hard part of this problem actually integrating into a human world.
I think one of the most useful, you touched on this, but one of the most useful examples that you give or ways of thinking about this is that when DARPA was working on this, that basically they were looking to develop the land-based equivalent to the drone. That's different to me than thinking of it as I said, you touched on this, but as you're replacing the current automobile.
Yeah, and so one of the early ideas here, when DARPA started on this, from a military perspective, they're like, look, we just want, you know, we have the Predator drone, we want more of that, and so it's going to be pretty easy to actually make these. So let's also do this for ground-based vehicles, right? It doesn't have to fly, but it turns out that, you know, flying autonomously is a lot easier than driving autonomously, because the ground is full of humans, as we just discussed, and it's full of, you know, objects. There's very, very little to hit in the sky. And I think that's where DARPA and the military got a little tripped up in its thinking, was like, well, why don't we just make these, why don't we just make the land-based equivalent of a drone? Because the land is a lot more complicated. And the other thing that you might tend to forget is the Predator drone is actually remotely controlled. And I think that was an early idea here, but something that would be really hard to make workable for military vehicles on the ground, because you have to pay a lot more attention when you're driving on the ground. And the issue of latency, you know, the delay between ordering a command and seeing it executed by the car might be slight, but on the ground, it's really important if you want to drive at anything more than a few miles an hour. Whereas in a plane, I think it's a little more forgivable because there are many fewer like immediate commands that need to be executed.
When you, I mean, one of the obvious questions is when we talk about commercial nature of this is cost. And I mean, we still haven't really gotten the hang of an affordable hybrid or green technology. So is that a really long road?
It is, in the sense that like a car that can completely drive itself, right, that doesn't need any human intervention, requires all of these sensors that the companies working on this have done a lot of good work, I think, to drive down the cost of those sensors and make them more reliable and robust and easy to manufacture. And they're starting to get the cost question in hand, but it's still going to be too expensive. Like, this is not something that you're going to get as an option at the dealer. Oh yeah, throw on the self-driving package and you'll get a big laser scanner on the roof and 10 more cameras and 15 more radars and ultrasonic sensors. That technology is still too expensive to work in a consumer vehicle, which is why the economic approach you're seeing from these companies is that they don't want to sell vehicles to customers. They want to run vehicles as fleets, as basically, you know, an Uber-like fleet of cars or a taxi fleet of cars, where you don't have to convince an individual person to shell out all of those extra thousands of dollars to own the technology. You just need to get them into an affordable car for a ride wherever they want to go. And the idea is that if you can keep that car on the road the vast majority of the day, right, maybe you need to stop to recharge the battery or refill the gas tank, but the driver, there's no more human driver, so the car can theoretically go 24 hours a day. And that's how you start to earn back that money and amortize the cost of the vehicle.
I mentioned hybrids a moment ago and other technologies of vehicles, which just brings to mind, and you've been covering this beat for a long time, but fundamental, and I'll end the conversation here, but fundamental changes in cars seems to be difficult to do, right? I mean, that seems to be something that we always see the car shows and the cool prototypes and think, oh, wow, there's the car of the future. And then 20 years later, we're still talking about it, which I find really interesting that we don't seem to be, while there is great interest, that things move so slow.
I think the car industry is just really hard to change, just the way it works. And a lot of this is the product of how good cars have become, how reliable cars have become. And that's because automakers spend years developing them. They're very good at building cars in a very specific way. And you've got thousands of pages of regulation that dictate exactly how cars should be made. I mean, down to the font you use on the VIN in the thing. It's a sans serif font. Like, that's written into law. And so it's a hard industry to change, I think, from a commercial point of view, to actually get automakers to do new things. It's also hard to make this technology really workable. I think that's one of the main lessons of the book, is that this technology is really exciting and it's just around the corner, but that's a pretty big corner. Like, it's really hard to make it get to the point where it's safe in every situation, or in, you know, 999,000 out of a million. And I also think that from a human aspect, like, sure, we're excited about the future, but to go back to your question, like, are we ready for this? I think, yeah, a lot of people would be ready to hop into an autonomous vehicle, but change can also be scary, and the car is such a fundamental part of life, especially in the United States. It's like, you know, just such an everyday thing, and to a lot of people, I think, a very personal thing. But getting someone to accept wholesale change of that element of their life is hard, and it's going to take a lot longer than maybe we originally thought, and certainly longer than the tech people at the center of this book imagined it would.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and you tell it beautifully. It's Driven, the race to create the autonomous car. Alex Davies is the author, senior editor at Business Insider. The book is published by Simon & Schuster. Alex, thank you very much for your time. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks, Joe. I enjoyed it.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Driven, the race to create the autonomous car. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.